Is the way we treat pain gendered? Journalist Gabrielle Jackson suffered intense pain for years. When she was finally diagnosed with endometriosis, it spurred her on to investigate how the health system views women's bodies. The result is the book Pain and Prejudice, which argues that women's pain is often dismissed and their illnesses misdiagnosed or ignored. And we'd like to hear from you. Do you think women's pain is treated differently to men's? And why? Tell us on Facebook. Gabrielle Jackson, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi.
Now, you call this book a call to arms for women and their bodies. Who or what are we battling?
We're battling centuries of medical science that has not been interested in women's bodies and therefore doesn't understand how they work.
And we're going way, way, way back, aren't we, to ideas about women?
All the way back, yeah, to the beginning of medicine and Hippocrates. And, you know, women's difference has always marked her as inferior. This idea that she had a uterus, which was obviously the main point of difference between men and women, meant that everything that went wrong with her was put down to her uterus.
The idea that you mentioned of the female as the mutilated male, that idea of women's bodies just being some kind of deficient form of men's bodies, or the bikini approach to women's health. We just look at the bits that are covered by the bikini and we don't have to worry about the rest.
That's exactly right, yes.
What's going on here? Is it still outdated sexist ideas, or is it about a lack of empirical research evidence?
It's both of those things, I think. It can't be anything else. The study of medicine has always involved studying men. As I said, you know, the bikini approach, they studied the breast cancer, although I have to say that only happened because of the campaigning of women who were at first told the same old tropes, breast cancers because of lifestyle choice, because you delayed having children. It's a career women's disease. And women said, that is not right. We demand more research. And they really lobbied for more money to put into research. And now we have these great treatments. That didn't happen without the campaigning of women affected. That didn't come from within medicine. It came from pressure from outside medicine. And that's what I think needs to happen here. There's just been, you know, some study on women's reproductive system, not a lot, nowhere near as much as needs to be done. But everything else was considered, women are just men with wombs. And we know now that that's not right, that the women's bodies and functions are quite different to men. So we need to really put in the time, money and effort to research women as well as men. And that goes all the way back to cell lines. It happens in preclinical studies. Male cell lines are studied. Male rodents are studied. Men in clinical trials are studied. Now women are included in clinical trials, but often the results aren't analysed for sex and gender differences.
And you write about the startling discovery that women and men experience pain differently, and men messed around with the immune cells of rats and discovered they could make male rats feel female pain. What's going on there?
That's exactly right. This is a fascinating area of science, and it's really great that that's happening now. For some reason, women experience more pain. Of all the big chronic pain conditions like fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, temporomandibular joint disorders, chronic pelvic pain, migraine, these are the major chronic pain conditions in our world, and they are all more predominant in women than men. So why is that? Why has it taken science so long to say, wonder what's going on here? I interviewed a scientist called Mark Hutchinson, who's worked in some of the biggest pain labs in the world. And they discovered, just by transferring one thing called microglia cells from female to male rats, they cause the same kind of pain in the male rat. So there's a lot to be studied there. I can't say that I'm the scientific expert, but, you know, this is a burgeoning area of science, and it's really fascinating.
And you've written really compellingly about your personal experience of endometriosis, the incredible pain, the nausea and vomiting, the brain fog, the major surgeries that you needed to have.
Mm.
But you've found that this is an incredibly common disease around the world. Why has it not been given greater funding and research attention?
Absolutely. It was such a revelation to me to discover that all the things that were wrong with me were all common symptoms of one disease. No one had ever put that together for me. I think it is, look, society has a problem listening to women. This is not just a problem in medicine, let's get that right. We see it in every aspect of our society. We see it in the justice system, we see it in media. There's this idea that women can't be trusted. So when they're rocking up to doctors complaining, it's just like, oh, you know, she's hysterical. This is what women have, how women have always been treated. So I don't think that, you know, all these symptoms are put together by a lot of doctors. It's also the fact that maybe women themselves don't put all, I never put all my symptoms together as one thing. I certainly never went to a physiotherapist and told her about all the different symptoms I had as one. You know, it was like, oh, I've got back pain because I had a skiing accident. Oh, I've, you know, nauseous because I have bowel problems. You know, I never, you know, said, these are all my symptoms. Can you tell me what's going on? So it's really complicated, but there are a lot of amazing doctors out there who do put all these things together and who do listen to women and who are really helping women live much better lives.
I found it really interesting, Gabrielle, that you devoted the first chapter to an introduction to female anatomy. Don't women at least know where all their bits are?
Look, I thought I did, but I didn't know. We don't know. We're not told. Girls are not even told the correct names for their anatomies in schools. And I think that all these things are related. Look, I talked to a woman in the UK, and there was a case where a doctor has had a 10-minute appointment with a woman who was talking about her waterworks. She didn't even know that she was reporting gynecological symptoms. She thought she was talking about her bladder. If we can't name the parts of our body that are hurting, something doesn't feel right, if we don't know the difference between our vulva and our vagina, how can a doctor put all this together? It's really important that we understand what's going on. I also spoke to another doctor here in Australia, and she said women come and report pain in sex, but they can't tell them if it's, you know, deep pain in the cervix, if it's hurting the outside. You know, they can't, they just say, oh, it just hurts down there. How can you get better if you don't know what's hurting?
Well, and obviously these have massive quality of life implications. Mm. These, you know, if you're having pain during sex, if you're having pain during your everyday life, but there can actually be length of life implications, can't there? Because it's not just reproductive diseases. The landscape is so much bigger of the conditions that can be ignored or minimised.
Yeah, exactly. And in the last 10 years, this is the thing, men have actually overtaken women in terms of healthy, active years of living. Women live longer, but they're more likely to be disabled after a stroke. They're more likely to have disabling chronic pain conditions. You know, there's this old adage that goes, men die quicker, women are sicker. And why that is has never really been properly investigated.
We're chatting with Gabrielle Jackson, who's the author of Pain and Prejudice. She's a journalist who's been looking into this issue for a very long time. We'd like to hear from you. Do you think women's pain is treated differently to men's? And why? What are your thoughts on that? You can tell us on our Facebook page. There is a lively discussion going on there. And joining us too is Carolyn DeCosta, Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the College of Medicine at James Cook University. Professor DeCosta, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi, Hilary.
Now, you've called Gabrielle's book a major contribution to feminist writing of the 21st century. In your career, what's been your experience of the attitudes towards women's pain?
Well, I think it's been extremely well summed up right now by Gabrielle and developed very much in the book. I have been a medical practitioner for nearly 50 years. When I began in medicine, women were about 15% of the student intake. Now they're well over 50%. I won't say we weren't welcome when I began. We were. But it was an extremely hierarchical, patriarchal system that we were being made part of, and it was extremely male-dominated. And that certainly continued for most of the rest of the 20th century. It's gradually changing now, but at higher levels, in colleges and as directors of hospital units and so on, much more change needs to occur so that we have gender equity there. I think at the same time, we have seen, as Gabriel has indicated, more pressure from outside the profession by women's groups in terms of getting more interest in breast cancer. But endometriosis particularly is something which has been, it's taken a long time for doctors to realise that how many women do have endometriosis and how much they suffer from it. And one of the reasons is that the diagnosis can only be made by looking inside the abdomen mostly to see the endometriosis. And in the 1970s and 1980s, this was not so easy, and it was certainly not something that was done for younger women. I was brought up to think that endometriosis didn't occur in teenagers or younger women. Now we realise that it does, and it does have these regular and incredibly distressing and disabling symptoms. And there is much more research going into it, as Gabriel has indicated.
And certainly, as Gabriel writes, and from my own memories too, the pain from endometriosis can be put down to just normal female pain. It's expected that you'll go through some pain around the female reproductive functions. Is that changing, Carolyn?
Yes, I think it is. I think often pain, when I was first in medicine, was dismissed as normal, along with labour pain. You know, it's part of being a woman. You have to expect to have pain. And this was very much a male attitude at the time. It is changing, and there are, as Gabriel has said, wonderful doctors, many of my colleagues, whose main area of research and treatment is the treatment of pelvic pain. Which may be due to endometriosis or other causes, but it is now recognised as a serious problem for women.
And Carolyn, when the gender makeup of medical science changes, do you start to see a change in the focus of research and interest in particular conditions?
Yes, and endometriosis is a good example. It is now rather late being funded better, although we need more. But we also need more understanding of the fact that when research is conducted and male models are established, those should not be just indiscriminately applied to women.
And Carolyn, do you think there needs to be better education for women about how their bodies work? We heard some startling things from Gabriel earlier about the number of women who can't label their body parts accurately.
Yes, Gabriel's chapters on anatomy and physiology are worth reading for every woman in Australia, I think. She writes beautifully about female anatomy and female physiology. Very accurate, but very easy to read, and in places quite hilarious, I found part of the book. I very much enjoyed reading it. And I've certainly found in the research that we've done just simply asking women what they know about things like fertility and treatment for infertility, what they know about contraception and emergency contraception, finding the lack of knowledge very alarming.
Gabriel Jackson, what role do you think religion and culture has played in the way that you say women's pain is both expected and denied?
Oh, massive roles. I mean, religion was traditionally one of the major influences. I think I would also say it's about the control of women. And I think one of the reasons women's pain hasn't been investigated is because, you know, a woman who is in pain a lot, can't work, stays at home, you know, that doesn't challenge the patriarchy. That doesn't challenge any power structures. That's where women are meant to be anyway. So who cares if she can't go out and get a job and participate fully in life? And I think that it's not only religion. It's all factors of society that have diminished the role of women in society, that have said that women should suffer. That's her natural lot, because she's much easier to control when she's suffering.
That's interesting that feminism has found an unexpected ally sometimes in economics. People saying, look, she's not productive if she's staying at home in pain. Perhaps there might be an avenue there for lobbying.
Well, maybe. One can hope.
Yes. You also write really strongly, Gabrielle, about the situation for women of colour. How does race compound this issue?
Oh, look, if it has been bad for me, it is much, much worse for women of colour. I sat in on an inquest into the death of a young Aboriginal woman, Naomi Williams, just a woman full of life, a fantastic career, so promising. And she did everything right. She went to different doctors. She tried to go with other people to explain her pain. She did everything you could imagine a woman could do to advocate for herself. And she was not treated seriously by the hospital she went to, by anyone. Her pain was dismissed. She was written off as a drug addict. She was constantly referred to drug and alcohol services and mental health services. No one referred her to a specialist to investigate the cause of her pain. And she ended up dying of an infection that was totally preventable. And, you know, this is why the onus can't be on women to change what they're doing. The system has to change. It was the most tragic case. It just, you know, it just makes me quite emotional thinking about it, because there's women of colour all across Australia who have this problem. They go in, they complain of pain, they're treated as drug seekers, they're not taken seriously, and their problems are not investigated.
Well, and speaking of investigation, I guess we rely a lot on pharmaceutical companies to do the research and guide those investigations. And I read with interest that they are getting out of the painkiller market. What role does government need to take here, Gabrielle?
They need to take the major role here, because there's just not enough known about how pain works. So the research has to go further back than medication to fix it. We have to understand how it works. And there is, you know, really promising stuff happening, as I said, but a lot more needs to be done. Pain is a very individual, it's an emotional and a physical experience. And we need to understand more about that, I think, before we can start, you know, having new drugs. But as Mark Hutchinson says, he sees a future where there might be different drugs, individualised drugs, and certainly different types of drugs for men and women.
And Carolyn DeCosta, how important is it, do you think, to keep having these conversations around attitudes towards women's pains and women's bodies, both within and outside the medical profession?
We have to keep on having them until things are changed completely, so that men and women and people who don't identify as either are treated equally when it comes to their healthcare, and in particular, as we're discussing it, to their management of their pain.
Well, here's to a future where our children and grandchildren laugh hysterically at the idea of the front bottom. Gabrielle, I think you and I were both raised on that. May it die a death. Thank you both so much for joining us on Life Matters today.
Thank you.